Before we get started, have you seen articles like this on TechCrunch about companies that were launched by startups who joined the Founder Institute? Well, the Founder Institute is accepting applications right now, and I want to encourage you to apply right now before it's too late on founderinstitute.com. The Founder Institute is a technology startup accelerator and entrepreneur training program that launches companies in 13 cities worldwide. What do you get if you're in the Founder Institute? Training, mentorship, help getting investors, and just about everything else you need to get a startup launched properly. Go apply right now before it's too late. Founderinstitute.com. And do you remember Patrick Buckley, who I interviewed? He came up with an idea for an iPad case, then he built a store to sell it, and in a few months, he generated about $1 million in sales. Well, the platform he used is Shopify. If you have an idea to sell anything, set up a store on Shopify.com because Shopify stores are designed to increase sales. Plus, Shopify makes it easy to set up and manage your store. Shopify.com. And do you remember when I interviewed Sarah Sutton Fell about how thousands of people pay for her job site? Look at the biggest point she made. She said she has a phone number on every page of her site because, well, and here's a stat, 95% of the people who call end up buying. Most people, though, don't even call, but seeing a real number increases their confidence in her and they buy. So try this. Go to grasshopper.com and get a phone number that will make your company sound professional and see what it does to your business. Grasshopper.com. Here's the program. Hey everyone, it's Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. By the way, I keep doing this, home of the ambitious upstart, over and over again. I wonder if at this point people have just forgotten that I say it or just overlook it, or maybe it's lost its meaning. So let me clarify. This is for an audience of people who understand there are tons of other things they could be doing right now. There are tons of other things that they could be listening to in their cars instead of downloading my MP3 or watching on TV instead of watching my video here. But they do it because they're so freaking ambitious that they're willing to listen to a whole hour program looking for one bit of insight that will give them one little advantage or help them take their ideas just a bit further. And they do that with me and a couple of other programs, and they read nonstop, all to just get that freaking advantage. And there are few people in the world who are like that. And those people, that is my audience. I feel at home with those people, and that's why I do these interviews. And instead of saying all that as a shorthand, I just say home of the ambitious upstart, because we have found our home together here in these interviews. Dimitri, this is a lot of pressure now that I've just put on you in this interview, right? We got to feed them that.
Oh, yeah.
All right, the big question for today's interview is this. How do you get not just users, but passionate evangelists? Because my goal is, and I've said this for a long time, my goal is for you guys not to just be another set of web entrepreneurs with users, but to almost create a religion that people are so freaking passionate about that they're going to go and shake their friends until they get your religion and start joining your mission and start being a part of your business. Not just users, but evangelists. So how do you do that? Well, to learn the answer to that question, I invited Dmitry Dregulov. He is the marketing lead at Zurb. Zurb is a team of strategists who help grow businesses. They've helped Facebook, Yahoo, Reuters, and even BritneySpears.com. So you know they are good. In our pre-interview, I told Dmitry that we needed to kick the conversation off with a clear example of what my audience can do if they listen to this program. And Dmitry, first of all, welcome to Mixergy.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And second, I've got a pile of notes here with examples from our pre-interview. Why don't we start off with the example about Smashing Magazine? I think that'll give people a little taste of what they could do if they listen to this hour or so long interview. So what is Smashing Magazine, first of all?
It's probably the number one publication for all design community out there.
Okay. And so how did you build a relationship with them? And then later on, I'll ask you, what did you get out of that relationship? How did you build a relationship with them?
Sure. I didn't know much about the design community, but I knew that this was the number one magazine. And so I read the magazine from the start to the bottom. I just read the whole blog. And I reached out to the founder, Vitaly. And I've learned everything about this man, that where he sleeps, who is he sleeping with, what does he read, what does he eat during the day. And I genuinely reached out to help him out with some content for the magazine because I saw that his numbers were climbing, but I saw some of the comments in the blog post. People were not very happy about some of the blog content there. And so I wanted to give him some ideas for some of the articles and build a relationship with him. There's some common background that me and him had, and I used that. And I also reached out and said, hey, look, there's some things that I wanted to show you that could help you.
Okay. And you built up that relationship. And what did you do after you had that relationship? Can you tell people about the articles that you wrote?
So we wrote 5 different articles for him, and we keep putting them out. We try and do one every few months or so, and we showcase some of the experiments that we create as far as tutorials of helping people create better websites, plugins, how to perform a certain technique in CSS or jQuery. After building such a relationship, again, I've helped him out by creating awesome content for him, and we have our own tools and plugins that we're writing about on Smashing Magazine. So it's a win-win there, and it just helps to build these types of relationships everywhere you go.
And did I have this right in my notes? You got the biggest traffic day ever to your website because of him?
Certainly multiple times we've had the traffic there, as well as TechCrunch, the deconstruction we did there, that was probably one of the biggest ones as well. So.
Okay. All right, so we're going to talk more about this. So what this is an example of, I thought, and the reason that I wanted to bring this up is, here you are, a guy who sees that somebody has a pile of users. Your idea is, how do I get some of those users to come over to my website? One of the first things that you do is you offer him some help, you give him some ideas for other blog posts, you engage in his community. The second thing you do is you start writing blog posts for him. And as a consequence, his audience started coming over to your website saying, well, who is this who's writing at Smashing Magazine? Who is this who's putting this content out? And they end up on your website. So the first thing I want to do in this interview, I've decided to break it up into 2 parts. First part is, how do you do what you did, which is build a relationship with someone who has a big audience and get some of that audience over to your website? In the second part of this interview, we'll talk about how, once you have that audience, once you have those people on the site, how do you make them into evangelists, into people who really care, who are passionate, who want to tell other people about it. So you say this. One thing that I actually noticed that you've said here is, let me see my notes. Be an assistant to your favorite blogger. How do you mean? How do you mean?
Well, everybody has problems, right? Everybody out there is having issues. And there's tons of bloggers and reporters that are just going through all this hard time trying to figure out an awesome story that's going to generate tons of traffic and it's going to generate lots of users and it's going to give them a lot of ad revenues. Or they might get a promotion if they work at New York Times or something like that. How do they stay on top of the latest news? How do they do that? Well, they talk to people all the time. Tipping people off on the latest information that you have about something, and that requires a lot of reading around, trying to find things all over the internet, but giving them the latest story scoop on something is something that can help them succeed in what they do, right? Creating something that helps them with their blog, for example, helping them create a better blog, getting more ad revenues, for example, from the blog. We did amazing deconstruction of TechCrunch. We've done deconstructions of many websites. And the idea there is to help a website understand what they're doing wrong, right?
What do you mean by deconstruction? Let's explain that to people, because I saw that your deconstruction of TechCrunch was on TechCrunch.
Right.
And we'll talk about what the results were. But what do you mean by a deconstruction?
It's basically you capture the website and you put notes on it to tell the other person what needs to change or what needs to happen on the website for it to work better. And we use our own product Notable here to do it. You can use different products as well. You capture the website and you put notes on it. You give them suggestions. Well, for example, this needs to be moved to this portion of the site to get more ad dollars, or you're not getting enough clicks, you got the confusing calls to action, for example. Too much going on the page, squint your eyes, look at the page, what do you see? I see a lot of bright spots. Well, I'm confused. Things like that. When you provide these suggestions to a popular blog like TechCrunch or, you know, or Mashable or CNN.com, all these sites, they want to improve their websites. So when you provide these suggestions to them, things like that can happen, where TechCrunch actually published the deconstruction that we created. So we call it deconstruction because we deconstruct the page.
You take a screenshot, you start to talk about every element on the page, you analyze what's there, and you suggest what should be there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right, so you did this, and by the way, you're getting Skype chats as we're doing this interview, aren't you? Hit do not disturb. Tell those people that they should come back in about 45 minutes once you're done giving my audience the advantage they need, giving my audience value for listening to me for an hour. Do not disturb. And if you're listening to Dimitri right now and you're Skyping him to tell him that you're listening to him, maybe you can tell him afterwards that you listened to him in the past instead of doing it while he's doing the interview and distracting him. Okay, so you did that. TechCrunch posted an article about it, including your screenshot with all your suggestions. What happened to you? What happened to your business as a result of it?
We've gotten the most leads in the one day that we've ever had in our 12-year history, I think, or something
just
like that.
Just from one article on TechCrunch, you got more.
Just from that article. We're still getting leads from that one article. That article was out, I think, November 23rd, and now it's in the middle of summer. It's almost the end of summer. We're still getting people writing in, hey, I saw that thing on TechCrunch, you know, put it away, I remember. And then and now we're still getting traction from that article.
Okay.
So imagine how long that link will keep giving us back now.
So how did you get them to even notice that you did this? Did you write that up? Did you take the screenshot, make some notes, and email it to them? Did you put it on your blog? How'd you do it?
We actually did it on our own for our own exercise, and we've done these for Twitter.com, and we did it for CNN and all these other sites. So when we created the TechCrunch one, I sent it over to Robin just to say, hey, look at what we're doing. And it was sort of an exchange of emails. We didn't think that it will actually get published. There was some talk on IM when we did the Twitter one, because that one got noticed on Facebook by one of the Twitter guys over there, VP of product. So there was some talk back and forth from the TechCrunch guys. Well, maybe they saw some of our other deconstructions. Maybe they post something like that up. But it's sort of a lot to ask, because it's sort of a self-critiquing thing, where if they post it up, look at how much we suck. We need to change all these things. What do you guys think? So. We had our doubts, but nevertheless, you know, if we would post something like that on our own blog, even again, it shows the value that you can provide other people. So,
all right, I could see how in this case it was helpful to them. You're saying with other sites that you did this for, they didn't really pay much attention.
We didn't really try to push it on them very much. This was sort of a natural connection. I already knew Robin, and we were talking back and forth, and I just showed it to them. But sites like Mashable or I think there was CNN or Twitter, they're just such big sites where they would digest it, but they wouldn't necessarily publish something like that.
So at the very least, what you're doing is you're flattering them, and you're giving them some feedback, and you're being of assistance to them. Even if you don't get the payoff right away, you've built up a relationship, and the payoff will come in the future. In this case, it happened very damn quickly, and you got a lot of results for it. What does it mean, by the way, that you have a lead? Did I ask that question already? Is that someone who fills out a form? Is it someone who calls you?
No, it's somebody that emails us, or, you know, get started at Zerg. They become one of our clients, and we help them out with whatever they need help with as far as creating the product, growing it, and so forth.
Okay. All right. Next thing you told me about was you said learn everything about them. How do you do that?
So I do this all the time. I love to learn where people started and where they are today. So people that I usually want to reach out to are people that have accomplished something big in their career or are very popular for some reason. And for me, reaching out to them, it's everything. It's before I even start any conversation with a person, I will learn everything they have done up to that point. I will learn who they sleep with, I will learn what do they eat for their breakfast, what's the latest tweet tool they use. I want to know everything about this person because I'm genuinely interested in connecting with this person, and I'm not going to just pitch him on a story and end the relationship there. And this is for real. This is like marrying somebody. You're gonna develop a relationship with this person, so you better find out all these things. You know, imagine you're going in the deal with a VC. You generally want to find out a lot of things about him. You go to coffee with him, you go here, you go there. Here you got the internet, and you have all this information at LinkedIn, Twitter, all over the net. So you generally learn everything that you can about them. And then when you connect, you have all that background, and some of it might intersect with your own background. And that's where the first ties can surface and can sort of prompt you to a conversation. You don't want to start a conversation off being, hey, I see you write for New York Times. This is a great article. Here's my thing. This is what I do. Want to write about me? Mine is cool too. You know, the guy has like 100 people doing the same thing. Why would he even bother, you know, unless he's heard about you somewhere? And it's just not a good way to create a relationship.
Okay, let me ask you this. Let me test you here. Pop quiz. What do you know about me? Who am I sleeping with?
Well, there's a lovely lady called Olivia, and you guys are going to Washington, D.C. I think you're leaving Argentina, and you guys are not really – haven't done Argentine tango? I don't think so. And you know, you moved to Argentina to sort of get away from everything and focus on getting these interviews going. You wanted to go to a place where, you know – there was no other ties. There's different languages, right? You don't speak Spanish. You don't really need
right,
any
Anthony
of
Sarah is saying this guy is good, and you're good. You're starting to creep me out a little bit here. The answer to tango is I don't know how to tango, but I'm not afraid to make it up. I'll just go out there on the dance floor, hold up Olivia with as much confidence as I can muster on that dance floor with everyone else who's doing tango professionally. I'll just go make my own stuff up. What are they going to do? That's pretty good. All right, someone in the audience, I guess it's Casey Allen, who's saying, listen, Andrew, you did an interview recently with someone who said that TechCrunch exposure doesn't necessarily send a lot of traffic. I hope I'm reading this right because I'm reading it so quickly. Bottom line, what I found is that for some people, it sends the right kind of traffic, and for other people, all it does is it sends over looky-loos. People are going to check out the company, figure out what they're up to, and see if they can copy them. I think Noah Kagan, who you and I talked with,
who introduced us,
the guy who runs AppSumo, explained it best. He said what he ended up with at TechCrunch isn't so much users and customers of his business, but people who want to do business development. So you have a different audience. It's not end users who are there, but people who you're going to do business with there, it seems like. And in your case, business is what you need. You're not looking for people to populate a website. You're not looking for people to try out your video chat app. You're looking for people to do business with.
You need to think about the type of people that are reading this blog, and you might want to test that on a smaller blog of that scale. So find a smaller TechCrunch blog which has a similar audience, and if you're really unsure whether the audience are going to react to your article the way you think you want them to react, which is another thing you got to think about, is what do you want them to do after they read that article about you? Whatever you wrote about, what do you want them to remember after that article?
What do you want people to remember about you after doing this interview? You're not getting paid for this interview. You spent not just an hour now doing this interview with me, but over half an hour doing the pre-interview. What do you hope to get out of this interview? Be open.
Just a marketing dude that's out there that loves to help people and wants to connect with as many people as possible.
For
that's
what?
All.
There is another motive here, right? Is it to establish a brand for yourself, your own personal name? Is it to get more business for Zurb?
Yeah, I guess in the meantime, the more people you connect with, the more opportunities you have to talk about what you do and kind of what products you build. But that's the more opportunity you have to learn about what other people are doing and learn from them, because it's a two-way street. You're not just pitching people on what you're doing. It's more opportunities to learn from all these awesome people that are passionate about creating products. And that's what I love. I love creating products. So, and I love to learn from people as well. So that's why I moved out here to Silicon Valley from New Hampshire one day, is to just meet as many people as I can and learn from them. So,
build relationships. I like that you said this earlier. Okay, now we've talked about how you've assisted people, you've learned everything you could about them, you've gotten to know them, maybe you got a post on their site. What I have found, and you and I talked about this before, is you'll help somebody, They'll be very appreciative in the moment. They'll love it. They'll be grateful. They'll thank you maybe publicly. And then they've got other business to do. They have thousands of emails coming in a week over at TechCrunch. I get a couple hundred every day. Everyone in business has got lots of other distractions going on. A month later, they've forgotten you. What do you do? And then you can't get anything. Then you're almost a stranger at that point. They have to go back to Gmail and do a search on your name to figure out who you were and why they cared about you before they could respond to you. So what do you do?
So every point of contact that you have with a person gets put away in his brain or her brain. So what you're doing is you're not actually just establishing a relationship to get an article out or to get a favor out or to help them out somehow with one thing and hope that they remember that one thing. Because like you said, they're not going to remember. You are actually going to genuinely establish a relationship with somebody that will pay off later on during the time. It's not going to just pay off by giving you traffic because this guy is going to write about you. It's going to pay off by you learning something from that person and that person learning something from you. So it's a mutual relationship and it's a genuine relationship, and you are going to keep reaching out to this person and helping them out in whatever they're doing. Whether it's an article that they keep, you know, different articles that they keep writing that you keep giving them feedback on, you keep correcting if there's typos on those articles, whether it's something that they're starting up later on, you read about them somewhere, you follow that person just like you did before you reached out to that person, and you genuinely help them out in whatever they're doing at the time. You don't just end
that's,
it right
that's then. A lot of freaking work. How do you do that without having it take up all your day?
Well, it's something that I want to do. I want that person to be happy, because I know that if that person is happy, then I can learn more from them. There's a benefit to me. If I keep friends with, you know, with a blogger at Mashable, and I keep, you know, updating that relationship, we're constantly talking about new things, I'm always on the know at the latest thing that's going on. I can always say, bounce an idea of somebody else. That person can bounce an idea off of me. So how do you keep it going? It's I come to work, I need to know certain things. I need to know what that person is doing, because I need to learn from them down the line. So it is a lot of work, I guess, but I don't look at it as work. It's more of it's just a buddy of mine that I'm just chatting with, you know, or talking to, or looking up what they're doing. I'm learning something new every day. So
what do you use to keep track of the people who you need to follow up with? Is there software that you use?
I'm a really big IM person, by the way, and so I usually add people on IM a lot, and those are the people that are my sort of friends that I maintain the relationship with, and the people that I need to reach out to for some reason. I actually have a list like this. Uh-huh. There's a bunch of scribbles on it, but it's basically a list of people that I just want to reach out to. And I cross them off as I reached out to, and they're on
my
own. Who
else is on that list? You actually showed us a list for today. Who's on your list of people who you need to follow up with?
I need to follow up with those guys at Fast Company, because we're writing an article for those guys, and we might be doing a different article there. UX Magazine, I don't know. Or the Entrepreneur Magazine.
Who at the company does the writing? Because you guys have a lot going on. How can you write all these blog posts and get them done right?
Seriously, man. I weekends, nights, I don't know. Just, you gotta. We write a lot of the content ourselves because we feel like we're teaching somebody to create a better product. And we have all this content, and we have all these people that have tons of content. So I interview them all the time, and I try and get it out of them. And I try to put it in the digestible form. If it was the actual publication that was writing it, not everything would come out the right way. There are times when we do interviews, like we just did Market Watch with the NPR people. That interviews over the phone work a little better, but where do we find time? We just do.
You write how many articles do you write a week?
Oh, I'm probably working on, well, we have our own blog going, so that's a lot of work, because we publish one article every 2 days on our blog, but it's more of a Seth Godin type of a tip. Hey, do this. Hey, do this on a product. And then we do about two articles every week. The visuals, the refinements, probably keep me busy there. So two or three articles. If you go to zurb.com/news, I think it's the current stream of all the published material that we've put out, and you can see it's two or three things a week. Usually we put out through other blogs.
So it's just two on your blog a week and two on other people's blogs every week.
About there. I mean, sometimes we have more. We have, you know, we'll submit three articles or so, but the turnaround time is usually a while. I mean, you submit something, you get feedback a week after that, then you got to submit again. The whole process just takes a while.
And to not have it take up, and to not, and because you can't know everything, what you do is you do an interview with someone the way I'm doing it with you. You pull out the best points from those interviews and you send them out as a blog post. So in other words, what I could do at the end of this interview is write this up and send this to Smashing Magazine and say, hey, Smashing Magazine, I've got 8 points for you about how to make people into evangelists.
Yeah. And it has to connect to the person and to what they're trying to do on that blog. It has to address his needs as well. So you want to send it out as a connection to something that person has written or something like that.
Okay, you keep bringing up our fourth point here for this section, which is be a guest blogger, do guest posts on other people's websites. That's kind of interesting. Why do guest posts instead of call them up and say, hey, we just did BritneySpears.com, we redid the website, write about us, or we just did work for Yahoo or Reuters or Facebook or any of the other people who I see on Zurb.com. Why not do that?
That's an awesome story. Oh, wow, you did this Britney Spears thing, but it's just too pokey, and who's going to learn anything from that? I mean, what are you going to remember from, oh, they did Britney Spears, cool, and that's all I remember, right? Instead of, here's a great example. I did a TechCrunch guest post. It's called Memory Inception, and it's tips for you on how to plant a memory into your customer's mind, right? So this is specifically a tip for anybody who's creating a product, a post centered on how they can actually plant a memory into somebody's mind and have them remember their product. So I bring out different examples on there, how Skype does it, how Apple does it, how Mint.com, and so forth, and that will resonate with a person because they genuinely learn something from that blog post. Whenever it's a guest post, it's much easier to do because we have the knowledge, we want to teach somebody that knowledge, and we can just write it up. And if it's a coverage by somebody else, a third party, about something that you've done, it's generally more of a press release. Look at Zurb doing the website for Britney Spears, they did these three cool things, or review of an app. Oh, look at Zurb, look, cool app called Notable, here are the five things that Notable does. Great, I read it, and then I'm on to the next thing. Three keys to plant the memory in my mind, in my customer's mind. Oh, okay, now I'm learning something. This is something useful for me. I might remember this.
So. And you intentionally used, as Mike B in the audience pointed out, you intentionally used the word inception because that movie, because of the movie that just came out.
Yeah. See. So again, it connects with what's coming out. People know Inception. It's hot. People talk about it. So I actually only seen previews of it. I haven't really seen the actual movie, but.
All right. So we got 4 points. Fifth point is find the pain point. Right. What's the pain point? How do you find pain point for people? TechCrunch seems to be living in heaven right now. They don't have any pain, do they? You know, I shouldn't keep talking about TechCrunch. It's impressive that you got in there, but it's not the only place that you've been. So in general, how do you find pain points of these people who have the audience that you want?
Well, you research the person.
Actually,
and you try
before
to...
you answer that, I gotta ask you. There's got to be a way to hit the do not disturb, completely do not disturb on Skype. I see you are a real IM person, and I think what's happening is every time somebody logs in or does something, we end up hearing it in the background.
Oh, okay. Doing that.
So somewhere in there, there's do not disturb, and that probably will take it off. And if that doesn't do it, we'll find another way to do it. If we have to, we will wipe out all your friends from Skype just so you could start fresh and I could not have the noise in the background.
Okay,
I hear that a lot on on all podcasts, actually. I hear that Skype bubbly sound in the background because all podcasts are done by Skype.
Well, I tell do not notify me.
Right.
Hopefully that'll do it.
Well, we'll find out.
Okay.
Okay. So the pain point you were saying, how do you find the pain point of these people?
Well, you know, it's funny because everybody has a pain point at some point, and it depends on who it is, right? So if it's an owner of a blog, or if it's a writer at New York Times, or if it's a speaker, everybody has different pain points, right? A blogger, he needs more users, more quality content. He needs to connect with those users through the content. A speaker, they need awesome topics to talk about, which they probably have, but they also need places to speak at. And then a New York Times person, they're just not having a great time, thinking about being laid off. They really need great content, and they don't like the traffic. I guess, yeah, it helps them a lot because when it gets a lot of traction, but most of all, they just need great content. And so finding that pain point and understanding the other person is what's going to connect you with them. And so you just generally look at what they've done. You look at the comments on what they've written. You look at their Twitter stream. You try to put yourself into the other person's mindset. If you can find any information that sort of validates some of the things that you think people have painful experience with, or something, a question that a person asks on the Twitter, or a comment that a person has made, something that verifies what you think their pain point is, then you have even more ammunition when you reach out. Hey, look, I saw there's a question on here. I'd love to help you out with that. Or I see that you've in this interview mentioned a certain thing that you're worried about. Hey, let me address that for you. Again, you're connecting with that person on that question, on that pain point, something that they need. And of course, there's basic things that you know about, you know, blogs. They need great content and great visitors. And so feeding that to people and connecting through that is how you want to build a relationship.
All right. Do you know what my pain point is?
You need awesome speakers for your interviews, right? So you need more quality content. You need to get more quality out of your talks, right? So you want to break it down into these points and suggestions that demonstrate more value to your audience. And then you got more audience coming back. So you need better stories, and you need a better way to dissect those stories so you get the most value out of them.
You know what? You son of a bitch, you nailed it exactly right. Yes, I need more guests here. And the people who deliver good guests to me, I love, and I'm willing to do whatever I can for. Noah Kagan, who introduced us, has introduced me to tons of people over the years. Somehow, he seems to know everybody. I need to do a whole interview on how he knows everybody, the founder of AppSumo. He introduced me to you. He introduced me to the founder of Foursquare. He introduced me to more people than I can think of right now. And then you're right. The next step after that is once I get the interview, I want to make sure that I pull out the valuable points the way you and I are doing. And right. Finally, the big challenge that I still haven't figured out the answer to is how do I take all of these points that we're making and somehow sort them out? Is there some way for me to highlight the most important tips from this interview, for example? You and I are going to go through 9 points that are clearly laid out. It's not always that clear of what the 9 big points are for an interview. How do I identify what those points are? How do I get them out there? And how do I do it in a way that doesn't suck up more of my time? Because I want to whip through these interviews. But that's a problem for another time. I thought I'd put it out there. Maybe someone in the audience has that answer. But you're good. You know what? I keep putting you on the spot and thinking, all right, if he doesn't have the answer, I'll rescue him. I don't want him to look bad, but let me ask the question.
Actually, you know, blogging all those points and after our video goes up, right underneath, listing those points with examples next to them would just help reiterate those points. And I know you do these little interviews where you put the little piece of paper with the point up there and talk about it. That's great. But if you put the actual points as bullet points and you put the examples next to them, helps reiterate that when people come back to the site, they can scroll through that and remember that.
No question. Between you and me, if I did that, it would be more valuable to people than the transcript, which I pay for and put up on the website every day, than the MP3 or video or any of it. Because, frankly, I think that's all people want. They want that quick point. They want the quick points, and they want to be able to move on. I can't give that to them, so I'm gonna ask my audience. Maybe there's a way that I can make it easy.
I got more speakers for you too. I organized an event here, which is all about teaching people how to create better products, and we've had amazing speakers here at Zurb Soapbox. So I'd love to connect you with, you know, the designer at Netflix, all these guys at Firefox and so
yeah,
forth.
Yeah, I saw that. You have an incredible... What I'm doing here by video, you do live in person. That's impressive. Yeah. Where can people see that? Zurb Soapbox?
ZurbSoapbox.com. Right. And then you can listen to all the podcasts and you read all the actual summaries of them. That's the something that people love to just, like I was saying, the summary.
All right. Actually, before we continue, let me say this, going back to the idea of pulling out the points. I do think that's what people want. They want the points, and I'd be able to grow my audience if I was able to just isolate the points. But there's some things that you can't really bullet point out that you learn from an interview or that you learn from life that just kind of somehow get lodged in your head. Maybe when you're listening to these interviews, you hear someone's story and it doesn't seem that important. But 5 years from now, you find yourself in a situation where that message stuck so deeply that it's there to rescue you. And I think that's why, in fact, I know that's why, even though it'll be cheaper for me to just pull out the points and not do the video editing and all that, it's still important to do the video and still important to get the MP3s out there.
Definitely.
All right. So now we talked about how to get people over to our sites. That lots of people can teach you. The SEO guys will spend all day and night teaching you how to get people over. We got the people over in, I think, a way that's more meaningful than search engine optimization. But now how do we make it even more useful and convert those people into evangelists? We talked about 4 points in the pre-interview. First point was the personal response. How did you do it?
So I worked at a company called Crossloop, and the idea was that you have a helper marketplace. So say you have a virus on your website or on your computer and you want somebody to fix it, you just go on the website, you find the helper, you pay them a little fee, and they log in remotely, screen share your computer, and then they fix it for you. So that was the community that they built. There was a screen sharing product, and I was one of the marketers there, probably the only marketer. It was the founder and me.
How old is that company, by the way? I love the idea behind that business.
Oh, we launched, 2006, I think it was officially launched. And then I joined 2007 when I came out here. And we were just closing our first venture capital funding. And then they closed another round of funding later on, about 2 years after that, or a year and a half.
How big a
Still
company are they?
Oh, there's only like 10 people, I think, or so. But
how many users?
5 million users now. Through the screen sharing tool and the website, I don't know what they have, or they're at like a million. I don't know. I gotta ask them now.
And it's a great idea. And the idea is that if my mom has an issue, she and I could both log into this website using this tool. I could fix her computer, right?
Yeah, well, it can work two ways. If it's just you and your mom, it's free. You just screen share, use the Crossloop to screen share and ask your mom to accept your request, and then you see her. I do this with my grandfather all the time. My grandfather doesn't know what the heck is going on anyway. He clicks random things all over the place. I can't visualize anything that he's telling me, so he's Russian. He doesn't speak English at all, so it helps me to visualize and have that screen sharing session going. But the site itself, if you don't have anybody like your son or your granddaughter or grandson, just log in. There's helpers out there online that you can pay $9 or $10, whatever, and they can help you. And they're rated. So what the idea was, coming back to personal response, we had these session surveys, we called them. At the end of every screen sharing, we just ask you, how'd you like the session? Yeah, good, bad, and then a custom field. Usually people would say, like, the love it. And I get maybe like, I don't know, like 500, 800 of these a day, right? And it comes to my inbox. And I made it a point to respond to every single one of them. And so right now you're listening to it, you're thinking, my God, I can't respond personally to it. There's tools that do this. But what I did is I had about 15 different templates. They're all customized. And I would actually shoot off these templates, batches at a time, to all the responses there. Once the responses come back, so then somebody would reply, they would be, whoa, I just said I liked it and I got a response from this guy, Dimitri. Is this sodomy? I don't know if this is out. Let me reply to it. So then they reply. Right away, I will reply back and say, hey, thank you for reaching out. I want to learn more about what you're doing with the tool. How are you using it in your workflow? I genuinely want to know, because I want to know how they use it so they can use this as a marketing opportunity. Improve your product through talking to your customers. Everybody talks about this, but personal touch right away, right after they use the tool, amazing. Just amazing response. And keeping those conversations going helps you, just like with those bloggers, use these guys as your bloggers, except these guys are going to be your little evangelists. They're going to be your little marketers. So they're going to love the product so much that they're going to end up, you know, spreading love all over.
What tool did you use to talk to them directly to create those canned responses?
It was actually hooking into Outlook, and it was, Outlook templates. I'll send you the link. I don't use Outlook anymore at Crossloop. And so there's if you use Gmail, there's a canned response addition that you can add, a customized addition. You can create any canned responses you want there and use that. There's tons of software out there to generate different types of canned. You got to be careful. So we actually have conversion emails that we do with our products as well. And you just want to make sure that you don't offend anybody or you don't make it sound too preachy. It's as if you are writing it. It's written more generically, but you want to think about it very hard. You want to at least get 5 people to review your email and actually test it on maybe at least 5 other people that are not in your company, just your mom or somebody else. Send them that email that you create and make sure that, ask them what they feel about it. Say that you got it from somebody else and you don't know what it is. You know,
If it's going to be the 14 responses that you're going to use consistently, make sure they're 14 good ones. My buddy Max Klein has a suggestion. He actually has a typo in his automated messages. Just a small typo, something like the word "the" is misspelled. Just so people think that it's genuine, because if it was an automated system, then it wouldn't have the typo. Somebody would have cleared it up.
That's a good one, yeah.
Maybe you want to make it perfect, but not too perfect. All right, definitely. Next point, delight instantly. How do you do that?
So it's really hard to actually communicate value to the person without showing all the barriers before it, right? So we create a product that's going to solve somebody's problem, but we're going to put a login on top of it. Then we're going to put another setup process where you enter your name, and then all these things that come right before it that just sort of just want make me want to leave now. One more question, I'm out of here. And I'm not delighted during that process at all, right? So I'm not engaging with your product at all, and delighting the customer is really tough there, because you want all these things so you can gather your info out, but then what about the customer? So what you want to do is, these barriers to entry, you need to sort of move towards the end. So bring out the value right away and give them a taste of it right away. You delight them right away with, we have a great product. Example, notable to Bounce, for example. I probably talk about it a little later, but Bounce is a simple product, right? It's a way to capture your website and put notes on it. So is Notable, same thing. You capture a website, you put notes on it, then you share that with your team and you collaborate, you iterate through those notes and you create a better product. The only difference is that Bounce doesn't have a login. Notable has a login. Bounce doesn't have, you don't have to set anything up. You just come to the website, you just enter your URL, you click grab screenshot, it takes the screenshot, then you can put notes on it, you save it as a public URL and you share it with somebody else. There's nothing that's standing in the way of delighting the user right there. There's no sign-ups, no logins, they don't have to pay, they don't have to put their credit cards in, nothing for them. They just come in and engage with you. So right away, you're delighting the user, and we found this concept tremendously powerful. We're just immediate engagement, and it just gets people going. They're like, wow, this is cool. They can see the value much faster.
I see. We used to do that at Dale Carnegie and Associates. I went to Dale Carnegie where they teach how to win friends and influence people. And obviously, teaching people how to win friends and how to have influence is not something that you can do quickly. And people walk into the classroom very skeptically. So the first thing that the instructors do is they try to teach the students one thing that they could do really well. It's not everything, and it's not the best thing that they could teach them, but they try to have one thing that they could teach them, knowing that if the students get a breakthrough on day one, They're going to trust the program long enough to stick with it for the 8 or 10 or whatever, however many sessions they need. Uh-huh. So you're saying do the same thing. Have that one-step process to delight. Not the full registration, not the full experience, but one way that they could immediately see results and be happy. And then they'll trust you enough to continue with you.
Nobody has time to sign up anymore. Like, say I recommend a service to you. I mean, do you really want to sign up? I mean, I guess you'll do it because you're my friend, but...
No, I won't. I'll say I'll do it later.
Yeah, you'll do it later. Like, here you just come and click a button. It takes you like maybe, I timed it was like 10 seconds, the whole process of creating the whole thing. And you see the value right away. There you're going to go see what other products there are to do this. And so.
All right. What about making it easy to spread? How do we do that?
Well, that's, so everybody talks about it, right? There's social media, everybody wants to jump on the bandwagon, everybody's putting Twitter buttons all over their apps, everything, share this, share that. You sort of need to think from the very core of your app or whatever you're building, your product, why somebody would actually want to share it, and build that into your core value of the app. So it's hard, right? So not everything is shareable. You know, I don't always want to share everything I have, but if it's in the core of the app, so for example, Bounce, again, I'll use that as an example because it's just very easy to get feedback on a website. Say everybody wants to know what's happening with their website. Where are they going wrong? What could be improved, right? And with Bounce, it's built into the actual tool. You create a screenshot of your website, you put notes on it, and then you tweet that out to ask other people if they agree with what you're saying about your site. Again, another tool we're doing is Verify. That's a test. So now they don't even need to put notes on that screenshot. They can tweet out a test and say, flash the screenshot of my website, flash it in front of you, and ask, what did you remember? In 5 seconds, what did you remember about my website? And then if you list 5 things, these are the 5 things that I can actually track through this tool called Verify. And I can see what people are saying, you know, what are people are remembering in 5 seconds. So I can quickly get a gauge on what's going on with my site. This communicates value to me. I want to know what's going on my site. So this sharing mechanism is, you know, I take a screenshot, I generate a URL, and this URL, whenever somebody clicks on it, can have a flash on my site, and then afterwards provides a form for them to fill out what they remember on that site. That is instantaneous value to the person using it, so they would want to share it with others to get others to respond and get value from it. And this is built into your core value of the app. Think about of all the people that each person that's going to use your app is going to communicate your app to, through Twitter, through Facebook, through blogs. So the suggestion is...
Let me see if I understand this. So this program, what is it called? The one.
There's two. There's Bounce and there's Verify.
So Verify. What Verify does is it takes a screenshot of your homepage or any page on your site. It shows it to people for 5 seconds, and then it says, what do you remember in the 5 seconds that you saw this site?
Right.
The idea is to see, did you communicate the most important message about this website? Did you communicate, in fact, what the website does?
Exactly.
Cool. And the reason you're saying that that is built to share is because anyone who uses it is going to send it out to their friends and their followers to get their feedback on the website.
Right, because you want to know what other people remember from looking at your website for the first 5 seconds. So it's a natural sharing. You're not forcing anybody to share. This is natural.
This is a great idea, by the way. What's the website on that, on Verify?
So it's verifyapp.com.
Verifyapp.com, and Bounce is bounceapp.com. I'm seeing the formula that you guys use.
Right, and so there was Notable, right? The tool that I talked about that took screenshots and you put notes on. We created Bounce, which was a way easier version of it. No logins, all this stuff. Verify is a more complete. There's more tests over there. This test that I talked about, the flash your screen, remember what's on it. That's just one of them. There's actually 6 more tests. What we're doing is we're creating another small version of this Verify app called Clue, and it's we haven't really talked about it at all, so I probably shouldn't even talk about it too much, but it's going to be released pretty soon, and it's also a public version where it's free, and all you do is you click a button, it takes a screenshot, and then you can create your memory test and share that with others. So
I like this idea a lot. It's something that I would use. Yeah. Final point. Create a simple, we kind of talked about this a little bit earlier, but our final point on making these users into evangelists is create a simple version of the product. And right. What you said was pull out the most, actually, how do you do it? How do you create a simple version of the product?
So here it is. So we have Notable, which is our flagship product. The tool, why is it? Why did we create it? To help people collaborate on the website, to improve websites, to give feedback on websites. How do you give feedback now? Well, you got to take a screenshot. You got to put notes on it. You got to attach it to an email. You got to send it off. It's just tough. So we created this tool which takes a screenshot. You put notes on it. And it had all these other functionalities in it. It could take the SEO. It could take the code. It could take the copy. All these things were private. You can have sets. All these features in it. Very feature heavy. We took that core feature, the annotation feature, out of it. And we created a whole new product out of it called Bounce App. All it does is just... All you do is you come to bounceapp.com, you take, push a button, it captures the URL that you enter, then you put notes on it, you save it, and that's it. After that, you can take that URL and you can shoot it over through email, through IM, through whatever you want, Twitter. And that idea just came to us when we were looking at improving that annotation feature. And we just loved it. And the response was tremendous from just creating Bounce alone. It's just very easy to engage a person. So we're doing the exact same thing with this test tool, right? We have Verify, which has 7 different tests. There is A-B tests, where you can have 2 screenshots at the same time up there. There's click tests, where you can have people click on the point on the site where you'd register, right? There's all these different tests. But to give them, just don't have them log in, don't have them create a test, just one simple test, the memory test, right? So we have Clue, which is a simple version of our paid version Verify. Again, no logins. All you can do is you click a button that captures your screenshot of the site, and then you can generate, then you click save, you got your URL, you share it with other people, you get people taking that test. So again, boil it down to one feature, one core thing that you have, and just show it to people. All these other add-ons are just things that people are going to want later on once they love the core feature. But the core value of the tool, just show it to people right away. Don't. And then you got to have 2 versions, because one is a simple one to engage people and one is the more complex one. So
let me ask something. How do you lock people in, though, when you have that basic version? The reason that you want to get their email address and get them to create a username and all those other things is so you could get them to come back to the site and have a good experience in the future. If you're creating a stripped down version of your product that doesn't even get their email address, aren't you just counting on them to remember what your website is and remember why they cared about it and remember that despite the fact that they have so much else going on in their lives, instead of at least capturing the email address so you have a way to nudge them and say, hey, you loved this before, come on back and get it again?
No, yeah, we just rely on them to remember the awesomeness of this tool, which is free, and keep using it. And what you can do is you can just put your tool's name into Twitter and see everybody who's using it every day. So you can keep track of people that way. They actually end up following you on Twitter through that handle there, and you just reply to them, you start conversations with people, and you're not looking for email addresses at that point, because it's just a tool to get them hooked in. If they want more, they can, there's another tool for that. So once they want more, that's when you want to engage them in the tool, and there's more features in there. Here you're just trying to get them to say, wow, that's awesome, you know, like FaceTime, wow, look at the 2 videos, I remember that right away, right? So it's all about the wow moments, the endings, right? How do you end something with a customer once they're delighted with that awesome first experience? They tweet it out, I respond on Twitter to them.
All right, let me sum this up before I talk about something that's a little bit off topic, but I'm curious about. So here's what we got 2 parts to this interview. The first part was we talked about how to build relationships with the people who have the audience that you want. And we have 5 points under that. First, be an assistant to your favorite blogger or whoever it is that you're trying to build a relationship with. Next, learn everything you can about them, and you guys all saw how Dimitri did it in an almost creepy way, even knew about who I was sleeping with. Number three, build a relationship with that person, because just because you help them once doesn't mean that they're going to be there for you in the future. They'll forget about you. You want to stay and continue to build that relationship. Number four, guest post. So instead of asking someone to write about you, you write for them about a topic that they care about and their audience is interested in. Number five, find a pain point. And we talked about different pain points, including what my pain points were. I challenge you to see if you knew them, and sure enough, you picked up on them. That's incredible talent, by the way. All right, so the second half of the interview is, now we've got this audience, we've got them coming in. What do you do to make them into more than just users? How do you make them into evangelists? And you gave us 4 points there. Number one was, the personal response. And you showed us how you can make everyone feel like they've got a personal response from you without driving yourself nuts writing an individual response to 800 people. We talked about some of the tools involved in doing that. Number two, give them that instant delight. So we talked about how if you have a complicated app, you want to make it a little less complicated so that people can have that quick burst of excitement for it. Number three, make it easy to spread. And in there, we talked about how you build the virality into the product itself. And number four is similar to that previous point. It's create a simple version and make it into that intro product. So there they are. Now that I sum that up, you help Noah Kagan. I am fascinated by this guy, Noah Kagan. You help him, you're his mentor, you helped him figure out a way to we didn't even get into the story of how you helped him. Yeah. But my big question is, why? Why did you help Noah Kagan increase his sales? Why did you help him make a better product? He's not paying you.
No. I saw AppSumo and we did this deal, and I don't even know how we made out because it's still in the trial period now, so I just saw a lot of things that he could improve, and I don't know, like I like the guy. He's got an awesome idea. He's also in the same sort of worked at a large company and came off and started doing something small, and I really think there's something there, and he's got a great idea. He's just not communicating value well on the side. There's issues with things, and I just naturally wanted to sort of build a relationship with him. You know, he could teach me.
Well, let me explain what it is to people who don't know. AppSumo is a collection of web apps that you can buy at a deeply discounted price. So he has now a collection of apps around web analytics. 5 incredible apps, cost hundreds of dollars to buy them individually. For a limited time, you can buy them now for $25. $25 is less than I paid for just one of the apps that he's got in his package. That gives you a sense of what it is. But it's a new product, and he hasn't had enough conversions for some of the previous versions of this. And he's iterating and getting it better and getting it better.
Yeah.
He came to you because he wanted to include one of your apps in one of his previous bundles.
Right.
At what point did you help him? Did he say to you, hey, listen, Dimitri, what do you think I could do to increase conversions? Did he ask you for help, or did you say, hey, I like this, let me help you out?
It was just natural. It was just like, hey, we're in this together, and then, you know, we're doing this, and we're, hey, this needs to change. And I got on IM with his girlfriend, who's his designer, and I got her on IM, and I'm telling her what needs to change and what needs to, you know, things need to look a certain way, and this needs to be moved up here, and then, you know, I get people here to get some traffic on there, what's next? And ever since then, we sort of just kept checking in. Hey, what's going on? How are you doing? What's the next bundle going on? And hey, I want to know what the next bundle is. Hey, maybe there's a deal for me in there as well, but I want to know how is it going to go next.
Why him? Most people would say, all right, fine, take this app and deeply discount it. Good luck to you. If you do well, terrific. We'll have more sales. If you don't do well, we didn't lose that much. See you later. I've got other things to do.
Yeah.
What is it about him, do you think, that made you say, I want to help this guy?
Because, you know, I'm going to help him and I'm going to learn how to create an awesome product that I can use to build Notable or to build Verify. I can learn tons of lessons from running AppSumo and learning how we, decrease the bounce rate, how we increase the conversion rate, what things did we move on a site to improve the product there. I can use those lessons to help me create my product that's going to be better. And then everybody's going to be better off. He's going to be better off. I'm going to be better off.
So by helping him, you find different ways to think about your own product that then end up helping you.
Yeah, exactly, because I'm struggling with the same things on my side. You know, I got to get more users to get notable, right? I need more people using that. How
Is
can
Get
I
Notable
that?
Your app, or is this an app that's run by Zurb?
Zurb,
okay.
Yeah, so that's one of our products. We're going to have way more products coming out. So learning all these things is just, it's valuable for me as well. So that's why I want to help him. I'll communicate what I know. We can experiment. We'll both learn something. And then the lessons learned will be shared with between him and me. So it's just an awesome way to, and the whole time you sort of build a friend as well. So
he told me too that he's doing this intentionally now. I think after you helped him out, he said, this is interesting. I want to do this on a more formal basis, have somebody who's really good at doing their business well come in and dig into my business and give me feedback on what I'm doing. And he says that he'll do the same for them.
Right.
How do you think somebody can start a conversation like that and get that kind of help?
Well, like I was saying, you know, you identify people's pain points or you find something that they're struggling with. You know, I came to the site the first time, appsumo.com. I saw some things that really needed help. There's just some things that are blatant and obvious that needed help. And I know that Noah is traveling. He's building this business. It's a big time commitment for him. He's got his girlfriend working on it. But there's just some things that need to happen on that site that need to change. So I actually help them understand some of those things and communicate what needs to happen. And that's how you can, if somebody you want to help with, identify the things they need help with and generally reach out and help them with those things. And then, you know, as the process continues, then, you know, they can maybe help you with something and you sort of keep that going.
All right.
So
no, thank you. That's interesting. And it's also interesting to see that he did something about it. He didn't just say, thanks for the feedback, goodbye, or I'm doing my own thing, or I'm traveling, I don't have time for this. I think it was Guy Kawasaki who said, embrace your thunder lizards when I interviewed him. These are the people who are most passionate or willing to point out even flaws in your product. And I said, come on, don't most people do it? He said, no, if you think about it, notice that it's easier and more people just turn away the people who are offering to help, who are their thunder lizards. And so it seems intuitive, but it's not. Jiffy Lou in the audience is saying Zurb needs to make it easier to find all these products that you talked about here today.
Okay.
So it's not easy to see. I didn't even notice on the website that you guys were in all those products.
Yeah,
you guys were creating them.
We keep them. We're still, you know, Notable is only 1 year old, and we're still refining it. But yeah, you're right. Bring those out on our homepage. There's so much other stuff we do. It's
there you
like
go. Jiffy Lou, now you've got a friend. You give him one or two more points, and then he'll give you points about how you can improve your business.
Yeah,
Dimitri,
let's
how can people connect with you if they like this and they want to follow up?
They can reach me, Dimitri at Zurb.
Dimitri at Zurb.com.
Or my Twitter handle is Dragilev. My last name, Dragilev.
Dragilev. All right. Dimitri, he is a marketing lead at Zurb. Thank you for doing the interview with me. And
thank you.
Thank you all for watching. Come back to Mixergy. Give me feedback on this interview. Let me know let me know what more you want to see here on Mixergy. I'm looking forward to all your feedback and email. Thank you all. Thank you, Dimitri. Sure. Bye.
Thanks.